A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging these arts organizations. Today, we'll circle back to the opera world and catch up on how the pandemic and resultant closures have provided opportunities to explore new approaches to creating productions. I'll speak with David Devan, General Director and President of Opera Philadelphia, and Prototype Festival co-directors Kristen Marding and Jekka Berry about some of the new directions they've been able to take opera and expand its reach. Let's start off with a look at some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. Andras Nelsons will be returning to conduct the Boston Symphony after nearly a year's absence as the COVID-19 pandemic forced the cancellation of live performances. In a statement, the orchestra said its music director will lead musicians in a series of recordings this month that will be streamed on its online site in the near future. The performances include four Beethoven symphonies and new works by composers Imam Habibi, Hannah Kendall, and Carlos Simon. Nelsons last conducted the symphony on January 31, 2020, although he did return to Boston when the orchestra announced the 3-year extension of his contract back in October. The BSO's on-demand streams can be found at bso.org/now. In other conductor news, Metropolitan Opera music director Yannick Nézet-Séguin has offered to match donations to support the Met's musicians and chorus up to $50,000. The Met has been criticized for having let its musicians go unpaid because of the cancellations while relying on non-union and overseas musicians for some of the events it has been streaming. The funds will be split between the Met orchestra musicians and the choristers, and fundraising efforts also support dancers, stage managers, directors, and choreographers. More information can be found at metorchestramusicians.org. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world.
And then we're going to add 7 ounces of semi-sweet chocolate and 2 ounces of bitter chocolate. I like the combination. And in they go. And off the heat. And you just...
As we head into 2021, many performing arts organizations are rolling out winter programming that was totally conceived of and created in the era of COVID-19, with its restrictions on live performances and the shift to a virtual world. In the wake of the pandemic, Opera Philadelphia launched its Opera Philadelphia channel, which has been offering made-for-the-screen productions on both an app and online. The experience of exploring virtual opportunities has enabled the company to expand and innovate, and its 2021 offerings reflect that. Opera Philadelphia premiered the production of Lee Hoiby's Bon Appetit, starring Jamie Barton as the beloved chef Julia Child, January 8th, and it will run through January 15th. The film was produced by Houston Grand Opera, which, as we heard last fall, has adapted one of its venues to serve as a recording studio. As an added twist, or should we say, frosting on the chocolate cake, Opera Philadelphia layered on a fundraising aspect, offering various culinary gifts to donors. Two other works, David T. Little's Soldier Songs and a new work by Tyshawn Sorey based on the 1887 poem Save the Boys by abolitionist and Black women's rights activist Frances Ellen Watkins Harper will follow in January and February, respectively. I spoke with President and General Director David Devan about the upcoming productions and how going virtual has enabled Opera Philadelphia to reach a variety of audiences.
We have people around the country that love what Opera Philadelphia does. And so we have it, let's call that their digital audience. And then usually we do a fundraiser each year. And so Bon Appetit is a way for us to do both. We're offering it on our channel for free for any Opera Philadelphia fans, local and otherwise. But then there is a sweet soiree gala component that involves food. Julia Child inspired Pierre Kemmel's adapted food and allows people to have something that feels like a socially responsible gala experience. And that's why we were doing it. And of course, we've been a big fan of Jamie Barton. I do an interview on the show, and we come clean that we've had a long distance love affair, the two of us, in the interview, because we've wanted her to work here so much, and she's wanted to do work at Opera Philadelphia so much because of our kind of groundbreaking stance. And it just, the things hadn't lined up from a calendar perspective yet. So when she took this initiative to do this show, to do the Bon Appetit by Lee Hoiby, we sort of jumped at the chance to support her in that effort, which is something that's interesting that's happening in the pandemic. We have so many projects that are going on our channel, like literally starting this week, that have been performing artist led and developed. And we've been supporting them. Soldier Songs, which we have a trailer that's dropping tomorrow, and it'll be on the channel on January 22nd, was, you know, really a project of Jonathan McCullough, the baritone, that wanted to do this piece in a certain way. And we followed him too. And it's just part of, I think, our normal practice of being artist-centered, but the pandemic has given us an opportunity to really lean into that, at least in the digital universe.
There's a note in the information that this is an HGO production. I had spoken with them a while back about their plans. What is their participation and element in this?
Yeah, so they produced it. The situation is Jamie Barton, the mezzo-soprano, she owns it. So she developed it. And then she's kind of like the executive producer. I'm slipping into TV land from Opera Lit because it seems to be my new universe. She's like the executive producer. And then HGO was the producer. And we are the licensee. So we've licensed that. I joke that, you know, we're becoming maybe more the HBO of opera than we were before because we're literally behaving like HBO. So that's the situation. And you know, this, again, this sort of digital space and all the things that are being questioned in the pandemic have really allowed for some really unique partnerships to happen like this one, which was just great.
And for those who aren't familiar with the opera itself, what is it like? What can we expect from it?
Well, I don't know. Like, I am such a fan of Julia Child. I just love everything she's done. I've cooked everything she's done. So for me, what I love this opera is it's like a Julia Child episode. It literally is taken from a Julia Child episode, her chocolate cake episode. And she was so kind of musical in her own weird way in real life, that Lee Hoiby, the composer, sort of really captures that and amplifies it. And so it's like watching a Julia Child episode where, you know, the internal music of Julia Child has become external in sort of a sound world. And Jamie Barton, so all the opera geeks out there who know and follow Jamie's career, does really big, serious roles. And she's a comic genius. And so this is fun. And, you know, for your listeners who are participating in the gala, you'll have this beautiful meal cooked by Pierre Kemels from Bibou. But if you're not participating, get out the cookbook, people, in advance. And make yourself a souffle or something, or make a Julia Child omelet, or do something just to ramp it up. I think it'll be more fun.
Well, what type of response have you been getting to the channel and the subscription model?
Yeah, so the channel has gotten lots of attention. And so far, we're right on track with the number of season subscribers. So we have over 50,000 people have dropped into the channel, kicked the tires, checked it out. And over 1,300 of them have become subscribers. And then in addition, we've had on demand. And really, it's not really till this month that the channel content is starting to really fill out. You'll be getting Bon Appetit. You'll be getting Soldier's Song by David T. Little at the end of January. So the catalog starts building. So we're expecting those subscription conversions to continue to increase, given the high degree of interest. And we're not talking like 50,000 hits. We're talking like 50,000 individual computers checking it out. So I think the response has been good. We're just running to catch up to our own idea. You know, to produce things like Soldier Songs, for example, which is coming out on the 22nd, you know, it's 3 weeks shooting, 3 months editing. It's like a real film schedule. You know, the Bon Appetit's been in plan since September. So it just takes time to sort of fulfill what you want to do, especially with this all this filming and editing time is crazy. But it's been good. The platform operates on a couple of different platforms. So there's operafilla.tv, which you can watch on your browser, but you can also get the app. And so we developed it like Netflix. So you can get it on your phone, you can get it on your smart TV, Roku, iTunes, Chromecast, you name it. And we're starting to, it's so interesting, the young people that are coming onto the channel are like on the app. Our older patrons are on the web, and I think it'll take time for that web transfer to go over to the TV, but the whole channel is being curated and produced for your television. It is not being produced for your computer screen. We want you to watch it on the biggest device you own, and we want it plugged into the best sound system you have, and that is largely people's home entertainment systems, which are their TVs. I think the big interesting thing for us with the channel, and you know, and especially as we populate it with this more content, is we're not seeing it as a band-aid. This is bona fide artistic work on its own terms. And when we get to start reconvening, which amen, hope happens sometime soon, we're sort of seeing that digital and in real life gathering programming, there'll be a synergy between that, because there are opportunities that both present us, and nothing replaces live performance, but the digital stuff's not to replace it, it's trying to become its own thing. We foresee at Opera Philadelphia those things will live together, which is why we've made the investments this year that we have.
Looking ahead at the schedule, you also have one coming up, Save the Boys.
Yes.
Tell us, give us a sense of where that takes you.
It takes us where we need to go. The composer is Tyshawn Sorey. He is our composer in residence. Larry Brownlee, who's one of our artistic advisors, introduced us to Tyshawn. And Tyshawn wrote a song cycle for Larry in 2018, Cycles of My Being, about being a Black man in America. Kind of prophetic. And based on that experience, we invited him in to be a composer in residence, and he'll be with us for 2 years. He's since moved to Philadelphia, and I mean, he's literally a genius. He won a MacArthur Genius Award. So he's in residency, and then a pandemic hits. What do you do? And so we leaned into digital space to keep that residency and that creativity going. And so we offered him one of four digital commissions, and he chose to write it with John Holliday, who's a great friend of the company and was in one of our world premieres in our 017 festival, We Shall Not Be Moved. Tyshawn knew him from, or hearing him from that. And so this is a totally creative output by one of the most important composers in the land. And he has total free form with it. Now, it's a digital commission, and it came about in the fall, or summer actually, so it'll probably be about, you know, 10 to 15 minutes, but we'll produce it like almost a behind the lens, so people get to see into the creative process and learn about this composer, because he's going to be with us for a longer haul. We're hoping to see an opera out of him at some point. There was a big article, New York Times just did a big article about him the other day. He really is a truly unique voice. And why I answered your question, where does this take us? And I'm saying where we should be going is because Tyshawn is, he bridges so many genres. And I think that's where the future is going. You know, he's improvisational, but he also does notated music. He's from the jazz world. His instrument's percussion, but he's he has classical training, you know. And for us, the residencies, he's for the first time, which is why I'm so excited he's working with Larry and John, two like unbelievable vocalists, because the purpose of his residency is for him to discover the classically trained voice, which he has not had an opportunity to do until his work with us, as well as Julia Bullock. So all of that to say, I think, you know, he's really a polyglot, and to see him sort of dig into that with our digital commission on the channel will be great. And I haven't heard a note, so I have no idea what it's going to be like. I'll be all with you. And I think, you know, when you're dealing with these composers that are coming to opera new, using source material can be very helpful, because there's so much new to discover that having something that's source material is often a really helpful idea, because there's just only so many variables you can build into a multivariable problem that opera is.
That was David Devan, President and General Director of Opera Philadelphia. You can find more information at operaphila.org. Back in the spring, it became clear to the organizers of the Prototype Festival, whose whole premise has been about creating new opera and music theater works, that they may have to shift gears for the 2021 festival. The result is three very different works that range from an interactive choose-your-own-path experience called Modulation to an on-site limited-audience experience called Ocean Body, as well as three other new works streamed from overseas artists. I spoke with co-directors Jekka Berry, who is also executive director of Beth Morrison Projects, and Kristen Marting, founding director of HERE, about the festival. We'll hear from Jekka Berry first.
We started talking to a lot of artists to ask what they were working on, what they were interested in doing, if we can't do an in-person festival, what ideas they had. And we got a number of wonderful ideas back from all of these artists. But there was something at the core of them that was not quite hitting for us. And after a lot of discussion, we realized that most of the projects that were being pitched to us were projects that were taking things that were already in process, that were already in development, and then sort of turning them and making them into digital content. And we realized that at the core of what we felt like we needed to do, if we were going to reimagine the entire festival, we felt like it had to be a reflection of what was happening in the moment. And actually that the core of what we were looking for was reflections on 2020 and helping to process everything that we were going through and have gone through over the last year.
We felt like we had a really important opportunity that we didn't want to miss, which was to give artists the opportunity to connect to audiences at a time when audiences could really use processing from artists and leadership from artists and thinking about the issues of our time. And that usually we're working on longer time frames, like 3 to 5 year time frames. And so a piece may be topical, but we had an opportunity here to really be topical and really be on the moment and in the moment that we didn't want to pass. So as we started over, we started thinking about what are the ways that we could unlock that immediacy in what we curate for this festival. And we evolved a few different approaches. We didn't want to just create a digital event. We wanted to find ways for people to engage with the world in a safe and socially distanced form as well. So in addition to the digital work that we were imagining, we started thinking about, well, what kind of installation opportunities might exist with no live performers, but where people could be safe and socially distanced, like when they're going to museums? And what opportunities in the outdoor space could we create or commission for artists to create and find a way to create a really exciting outdoor experience for people?
Among the three that will be included, each take kind of their own different approach. The Modulation is kind of a choose your own. Tell us how that's going to work a little bit.
Modulation is a standalone website, audiences will get access to that website. And then it is set in a landscape where you are choosing initially between themes. So we have three themes in Modulation: fear, isolation, and identity. Those were themes that the directors came up with, that we came up with because we felt like they would be a jumping off point for composers to explore what's been happening this year. And so we commissioned 12 composers on those three themes and allowed them to choose which of them they wanted to respond to. And then we commissioned a 13th composer who created amazing interstitial music. So anytime that you're not within one composer's work, within their video, you're hearing this interstitial music, which is around the theme of breath, which we felt like connected everything together. So an audience member will be choosing a theme. They will enter through a portal into another world, another visual world. And within that world, they will have the choice to choose between different videos that have been created both sonically and visually by the composers that we commissioned.
And this was a really exciting opportunity, too, because the composers are imagining the entire world. We gave them the agency to craft a whole world, which composers are often, they're given the compositional world, but not the visual world as well. And so this was a really exciting process. And some of them had a lot of experience with that, and others, this was a brand new thing for them to be doing. So we were really excited to create this kind of agency for artists in this time. We're also working on Times Cubed, which is a collaboration between theater artist Jeff Sobel and experimental composer Pamela Z. Both artists have done interview-based works in very different ways, and that's how we got interested in the idea of putting them together to make something. We have previously done Out of Bounds. Out of Bounds is our outdoor series. We had previously done Out of Bounds work at Times Square, and we thought that Times Square was certainly a place that was transformed in 2020. More than many other places in New York in an iconic way. And it felt like a really rich place to make a jumping off point. It's also such a gathering place for New York City. And so they came up with an experience that they're calling a sonic experience instead of a sound walk. And they have designed it for you to either do at home sitting on your couch or to go to Times Square and experience it. And if you choose to do it at home, it's just as valid an experience. But they're making that option available so anyone in the world can have the experience, whether they're in person in New York City or not. And it's thinking about the Times Square of the past, the Times Square of the present, and the Times Square of the future long after we don't have electricity anymore and it's become a completely different world reclaimed by nature.
It was interesting because when we were first thinking about this idea of outdoor spaces that have been changed dramatically in 2020, Times Square seemed, you know, such a obvious choice. And what Jeff and Pamela have done with it is really expanded that idea so much. So they've interviewed historians and ecologists who look at what Manhattan and Times Square would have looked like in the 1600s. And also, as Kristen said, what Times Square will look like when all of the humans are gone in the distant future. So they took, you know, this idea of a moment of change in 2020 and then stretched it out over sort of an infinite amount of time in this beautiful way.
The third piece that you were referring to, our third world premiere, is Ocean Body, which is an in-person installation, socially distanced, of course, and safe. It's a short experience. It's a 15 to 20 minute experience with a very small group of other folks. And it's a collaboration between composer-performer Helga Davis and Sharon Nova, and Mark DeChiazzi as the filmmaker, director, visual person. So composer-performer Helga and Shara, they have a really long friendship and a really long history of collaborating, and they wanted to make a piece that was dealing with their friendship as a Black woman and a white woman, especially in these times, and thinking about the complexity of all the things that relationship holds. So this also felt really relevant and resonant to us right now.
The current circumstances give you the opportunity. You're doing three digital premieres from outside the U.S. What are those three and what can we expect from them?
Yeah, we have three international works, digital U.S. premieres. You know, every year in Prototype, we have international work, and it's one of our absolute favorite things. It's one of our audience's favorite things. But, you know, due to budget constraints, you know, having one a year is all we can usually manage. And so we've really run with this this year, being able to present three of the works. So we have works from Iceland, from Australia, and from Indonesia. The work from Indonesia is a piece called The Planet, A Lament, and is really a meditation on what we have done to the planet and what we continue to do to it. We have a piece called Wide Slumber for Lepidopterists, and we have a piece called The Murder of Halit Yozgat. And all of those are, again, you know, they're chosen because we think that they are relevant to the moment and to the themes that we're wrestling with this year.
we know that the return to normal is not exactly going to be returned to the old normal. What are some things that you've seen happening through some of these that suggest new directions that we may find opera and opera productions moving in the future?
I feel like there's already been a lot of progress in the field in the last 10 years. And I think that there's a greater embrace of contemporary opera theater works than there was, that's moving more into the core of the field in a way that I find exciting. I also think that the more that you bring living composers into the conversation, the more the form is going to diversify and expand. And I feel like we're seeing that, and that artists find the way to work that interests them. And as long as you're listening as a creative producer, you can help amplify what those artists want to do. And I think that that's a big part of what our job is listening to the artists and following where they want to go and supporting where they want to go.
And I think that there's also, you know, a deeper understanding and conversation around accessibility and what that means. And I think that, you know, considering there was a work that BMP, a work that premiered in Prototype, Angel's Bone by Dion and Royce Vavrick, it won the Pulitzer. BMP was supposed to tour it last season to LA Opera, and that got canceled. And we were going to do two performances of the piece in a 550-seat house. So 1,100 people were going to get to see that production. And instead, we did a digital co-presentation with LA Opera on the dates when it was supposed to premiere, and 22,000 people saw it. So I think that we are learning how to add tools to our toolkit of accessibility. And that's the thing which I really hope we continue to do, is thinking about how do we return to live performance, but how do we use the digital format to reach audiences that don't have the luxury of being able to come and see every live performance that we do.
I guess I would just add that our festival is interested in interrogating the line between opera theater and music theater, mm-hmm. and in putting those things in conversation with each other, and in encouraging people who think they only like opera or only like music theater to find that that's not as clear a line as they think, and that there's a lot of overlap and conversation that can be had around that, and that that changes the way that you think about what a form is, and changes who you think will be in your audience, and changes the artists that you might be exposed to.
Our goal every year is to surprise our audiences, to take them on a journey, and that's no different this year. You know, we have always had adventurous audiences that are willing to go with us, as Kristen said, you know, from more traditional works to more experimental works, and we hope that those adventurous audiences will join us this year for Prototype. You know, it looks different, it feels different, but we ultimately, our goals are the same, which is that we are taking our audiences on a journey and hoping to surprise them and introduce them to some artists that they didn't know before.
That was my conversation with Prototype Festival co-directors Jekka Berry and Kristen Marling. A full schedule and links can be found at prototypefestival.org. I hope you enjoy the conversations I bring you each week on Atempo about the changes and challenges facing the performing arts. But remember that programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening to Atempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. Atempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.